Mother, man.
Lawrence Spinnaker here.
Roy Norris here.
We got our pliers out listening to Murder Metal Mayhem.
Spreading faster than a case of the clap in a trailer court. Able to shatter eardrums within a 666-mile radius. A podcast more brutal than all the rest. It's Murder Metal
Mayhem! All right. What the hell's going on, guys?
What the fuck's up?
Hey, it's Tuesday. We're doing that thing we do here at Horns High Studios for the Horns High Podcast Network. Doing some Murder Metal Mayhem tonight, Chris, and getting kind of nasty, Joey.
Oh, yeah.
Episode 164. So I got you guys in here with me. And how was everybody's New Year's Eve?
It's all right. Didn't really do like anything spectacular, just the normal shit.
Just chilled.
Yeah, I was in bed by fucking 10.
Yeah,
I had to work the whole time.
I was surprisingly like, I wasn't partying so much, but I was somewhere where people were getting completely wasted.
Oh, right, yeah. Right.
It was kind of annoying and kind of fun at the same time. You know what I mean?
Right.
So anyway, yeah, we went to some friend's house. They were doing like karaoke and they were begging me to do it.
For real?
And I was just like, about half of them had heard me do like My Heart Will Go On and some other shit. So they got the deal, but the couple of them didn't know and they kept trying to ask me. They were asking me to do it and I just really wasn't in the mood for it. But then there was a moment where I almost thought, you know what? Fuck it. I'm going to do My Heart Will Go On and just clear the fucking room, you know?
Right.
And it never wound up happening. So I just was good. Sat on the sidelines, but yeah, we didn't get home till like 3 a.m, which for us is like unheard of. Like done that. I can't even tell you when. So it was kind of funny, but man, the sleep schedule completely fucked up. I mean, right. It took us like 2 days to kind of get back into our normal, because you just don't do that. You know, back in the low 12 days, I was coming home at 3 and 4 a.m. all the time, back from a club, you know, and unload and all that bullshit, you know, you guys know the deal. So it was oddly crazy for me, crazier than a normal evening. So.
Sounds like you've had a decent time.
I did. What shirts you got on there, Chris?
I got my face.
I recognize it.
Yeah, my faceless screen print shirt on.
Hell yeah.
Badass.
Yeah, Dave Orkin, the guy behind that did our t-shirts for us, did some Low 12 stuff. And
he did my Goremonger Moss shorts.
Hell yeah.
And I wanted to get some shorts done, I remember, and fucking, because they were all like, that's the shit everybody was buying when they started wearing the basketball shorts with the band names.
Right.
I was like, man, where can I get these done? And somebody fucking suggested him, you know.
Oh, cool.
And I hit him up, and he was like, yeah, and he fucking gave me a good deal. Like, he was so fucking good.
Yeah, Dave's amazing. You know, I saw you shared that bandana, the Goremonger bandana, and I can't believe you didn't market that thing as a cum rag.
Right.
I mean, that would have been a problem. That's what I thought you were saying. Comrades. I was like, Goremonger cum rag, that'd be fucking perfect. You know? Which, I mean, what better thing to use?
Full disclosure, that's just, as far as I know, just a one-off that Jason did. Murder Machine Clothing, but they are fucking cool, and I'll probably fucking end up trying to grab some. Though.
Yeah, that's awesome. And what do you got on there, Joey?
I got the fucking Chicago Domination Fest shirt.
Nice.
I want to go with Chicago. I was going to wear the Macabre shirt, and just to be honest, fucking, it's so fucking cold out. I ran across this hoodie, and I was like, this will work.
Right.
So, CDF shirt.
There you go. Representing Chicago.
Oh, yeah.
And your Cubs hat, too.
And the Cubs hat.
Very cool. And I've got my Enforced shirt on. Yeah. I love those guys. They were in my top five, actually. The biggest, or the most new band in my list, you know, the least established of them all.
Right.
I really like their Kill Grid album, and they actually shared a few different lists they were on Facebook, and they were listed on quite a few of them.
Right.
Some pretty prominent ones. They made the like top 10, top 20, whatever they were sharing. So that's cool. Dig those guys. All right, last week, guys, we did our final episode of 2021 with a feature on the sick-ass little Eddie Gein shit.
Hell yeah.
Love to dig up graves of old women and bring them back to the farmhouse in Plainfield, Wisconsin. Pretty fucked up. Loved his mom.
Yeah, loved his mom for sure.
I bet Mother's Day was like a fucking like a national holiday over there at Dean House. He also killed at least two women, probably his brother, and then maybe another bar owner.
Right.
We had our listener, Rebecca Boomsock. That was really cool. Rebecca came on.
She's great.
Yeah, she shared because her uncle was one of the cops, actually the first cop to show up out at the Plainfield farmhouse in 1957. How crazy, Joey, would that have been to be that guy?
Yeah, like, especially back then. Like, you're not desensitized like people are now.
Right.
That shit is
And
like,
he was, she said he was like a volunteer, like auxiliary cop. So... He was probably a farmer, you know, some other occupation. Yeah. He just happened to be like, out there, took the like badge out of the glove box.
Yeah, like a security guard with a little more credit.
Right, yeah, so that's crazy. So that was cool. And we also counted down our top albums of the year, the metal albums of 2021. We did that special Killer Cage match, Chris. Did you like that?
Yeah,
that
was fun. It was fucking great.
Got Rebecca in on that. She won, so that was cool.
Of course.
And she beat up Catherine Knight, too. Pretty fucking vicious.
Hell yeah.
So that was a good one. So if you missed episode 163, go on and give it a spin. We were just passing 800 when I checked that earlier today. So that was cool. Tonight, though, guys, we got another one that's been on the list for a while. Man, this is going to get gnarly, Chris. I mean,
yeah, fucking goddamn toolbox shit, man.
Yeah, the toolbox killers, Lawrence Bittaker and Roy Norris. Of course, I got everybody their own pair of pliers tonight.
Yeah.
Because, Chris, what's the significance of the
bad.
What's that?
I thought they were roach clips.
Oh, you thought they were roach clips? Well, you can. I mean, whatever, right? So we each got a pair of pliers in here. We are going to get nasty, some horrific violence and depravity. So we don't give warnings. If you're listening to Murder Metal Mayhem and you're shocked at what you hear, then you need to go somewhere else. But
that's your warning.
Tonight is going to get even more brutal than before. So some of the worst stuff when you talk about creepy rape van shit,
Murder Mac,
sexual sadism, you know, over just a few months, which is crazy too, in 1979 in Southern California. So we're going back out to California, like horror movie shit. This is just absolutely brutal. No, that's going to be in the murder segment. So that should be good. And Joey, you got the horns tonight. What's the band that you've picked tonight?
Doing Macabre.
Hell yeah.
Murder Metal from fucking Chicago, Illinois.
That's right. Our listener, Justin Morris. I'm sorry.
He did fucking guess the fucking band.
Yeah.
So he won the fucking little contest we did there.
Yeah, he got the activity book. He got the new Goremonger album. And he requested the first Low 12 Flesh of the Week.
Yeah.
So I hooked him up with that. So.
And I didn't give him the new Goremonger album, but a newer one because I haven't got the new ones yet. They should be at my house anytime now. But
okay.
I did get them fucking one of my full lengths. So.
Good. So that's going to be a good one, especially with our love of serial killer stuff. Talking about Macabre, definitely good with that shit. So,
hell yeah.
Chris, you're going to have a lost classic for us.
Yes,
looking forward to hearing that.
I do.
And so you guys will have to stay tuned for the metal segment to hear about that and some other good metal news. I got a couple of things I want to mention, bands I've been jamming. So it's going to be good conversation. And we got a killer cage match tonight. Always a favorite with our listeners. We have our listeners, Chris, pick some random numbers. And we come up with who's fighting in the cage and what they're fighting with. So who do we want to thank tonight?
Once again, we got...
Big surprise.
Big surprise. We got Rebecca. Boomsock. Hell yeah. Fuck yeah.
Hell yeah.
We got Ray McFalls. How's it going, Ray? And fucking, we got Michael Draymond.
Michael Draymond. Hell yeah. So that's a good one. Thank you, guys. And we got an interesting match in the cage tonight, Joey. What's happening?
We got two fucking people that love to cause some pain, and that's Ted Bundy versus Carl Panzram.
Hell yeah, dude.
Motherfuck.
When Michael listened to the fucking last week's podcast, because remember, he was in the cage match, a variable.
What did he think of
that? I was talking about him being stoked, fucking, you know, watching the, or listening to the
Disturbed. Oh, the Disturbed,
He just hit me up, and he was like, fuck you about the cage match.
Oh, that's good. So we got Ted Bundy and Carl Panzram. Holy shit. couple of good objects and a variable to make it interesting. So we'll do that in the mayhem segment. I forgot to mention, too, I finally got to show my joke gift to my
your
kids.
My daughter and
but the one for Katie.
Yeah, right. I did one for my daughter Katie and my daughter-in-law Marcia. My son Joe, I also got him involved, but in a different way. So with Katie and Marcia, I got them, and I've done this before to people, a picture of somebody they hate. Like, they really can't stand this woman that they used to work with. She's like a Jesus freak. And she just made life very difficult for everybody at the place where they
worked. Right.
So I thought it would be funny to go on her Facebook and print out at Walgreens like an actual picture of her. And then I signed it. And I signed it, get you some Jesus, and then a heart, and then her name. So anyway, my daughter opened, and I got those Jesus stickers. That's why we were going crazy that episode with the Jesus sticker.
Right.
Because I bought some on Amazon. It's hilarious. And I put, you know, a handful of them in each one. So I boxed them up, and Katie opened hers. Marcia was not there. So I was like, oh, but Joey recorded it.
Oh, right.
So I got to see her reaction, open it. Yeah. And Katie was pretty much like I would expect, like, really? What the fuck, Dad? You know, like, you're crazy. And I said, well, are you going to put it up somewhere? She's like, oh, yeah, definitely. So she's, you know, she's up for the joke. Marcia just opened it up and laughed and just was like, oh, my God, and just really didn't say much else. Now, my son, when I was at the Peoria Library doing my book signing here just recently, they had that bookstore I've mentioned. They had a whole bunch of books on clearance, like a dollar.
Right.
And they were like hardbacks, you know. So I saw this one Michael Bolton biography. And I bought it because he gets a big kick out of that Lonely Island song with Michael Bolton with the whole Pirates of the Caribbean thing. So I bought this for Joey, and then I signed it. Joey, from the Isle of Tortuga, you complete me, Michael Bolton. And I signed it.
Fuck.
And I wrapped it up, and he was just like, what the fuck? He opened the book up and he's like, what the hell is this? I'm like, look inside. He signed it for you. And he's like, what? And he saw that and he's just like, oh my God. So, yeah, so it's all good stuff. So that's just, you know, the way I do it on Christmas.
Hell,
I like to goof around a little bit. So thanks to all you fuckers listening to Murder Metal Mayhem. We keep seeing those numbers coming in. This week, guys, we're at 2,800. So we're creeping back up to that 3,000 listens
there,
a week,
yeah.
You know, which is where we were before we had a little bit of a slump. So thank you to everybody that's listening.
Y'all are the shit.
That's right. Well, Chris, Joey, as always, we got a lot on our plate tonight. We're going to be taking a little trip west to sunny California. But I want to try to avoid ending up in the back of some skanky fucking Murder Mac van.
Murder Mac.
Meeting the toolbox killers. So.
Hell yeah.
So yeah, let's grab our fucking pliers and our coat hangers and let's get our murder on.
Hell yeah, a little Arch Enemy, the song House of Mirrors, a new song. I gotta say, I really like that song. I was really surprised. I'm not a big female singer and metal guy, but man,
she's got some pretty decent pipes.
Yeah, very, very impressive. The musicians in that band are absolutely unbelievable. Michael Amott, Jeff Loomis, Charlie D'Angelo, the drummer's fantastic. They're all just really good, so... I gave him a chance. I saw Michael Amott shared it on Facebook that they hit 1 million watches on YouTube to that video in a week.
Fuck,
that's pretty impressive. So, yeah, go check it out. Arch Enemy, House of Mirrors. All right, we are going to be doing our feature tonight on Lawrence Pliers Bittaker, which is why we got all these pliers
fucking pliers.
Fucking pliers, huh? And Roy Norris, also known as Chris.
The Toolbox Killers. We've done the Toy Box Killers.
Yes, I did. Nah. When I Googled it, you see some David Parker Ray shit.
Yeah.
So, yeah, easily confused. Not Toy Box. We're talking Toolbox Killers. Sadistic shit, raping and killing at least five teenage girls in only 5 months in 1979.
Rampage.
In Southern California. Yeah, straight rampage. Just straight up brutal. FBI profiler John Douglas, that guy is like an icon, said that Bittaker was the most disturbing criminal he ever profiled.
That's saying something.
That's saying something. And the attorney that prosecuted him said this was pale. The Manson murders pale in comparison to this stuff.
Right. It's fucking
very bad. He was on that case as well as a young attorney, but holy shit.
That it was like, that was bad, but this was terrible and it was kids.
Right.
Yeah.
That's true, man. And 5 months, it's just crazy.
Yeah.
So yeah, Bittaker was just, they were both brutal, but Bittaker was holy shit. They earned the nickname Toolbox Killers because they used some basic household tools to inflict some of the most horrible pain on their victims you can even imagine. God. In the GMC van, Joey, known as what?
Murder Mac.
Hell yeah, the Murder Mac.
Like, they're just straight up like, dude, these Big Macs are good. Let's call the fucking van the Murder Mac.
Yeah, I was going to say, they should have been in a McDonald's commercial with the, like, hey, well, we're not raping, you know. I'm eating a Happy Meal.
Oh, hell yeah. David Parker Ray is like, fucking Murder Mac's pretty cool, but hold my beer.
Right.
Yeah, right. Right. Let me get my dog in here real quick. So that's it's a fucked up story. And we're going to get into that one tonight. Brace yourselves for a very, very fucked up feature here tonight. Chris, these two creepy fuckers in a rape van, I mean, literally.
Like 100% straight up.
I mean, it doesn't get much more like stereotypical. Like when you think of a rape van with two creepy dudes, I mean.
That's what you think of. Van, fucking sliding door on one side, no windows, fucking.
Yeah. By design, so the door wouldn't have to be open any longer than it needed to be.
Like the place they're killing. Like, if I'm thinking of stereotypical, like,
right,
what we're talking about, creep van, this, that,
right.
Southern California is exactly where I'm thinking of, or California, the coast.
Right.
And that's just, everything they did was just like, you plan this out in prison, perfect.
Right. Just it's like a scripted mission. Like, you couldn't have wrote it more typical than this.
Exactly. Right?
Very, very fucked up. And Joey, for our true crime listeners, I mean, how many of you think are going to know Toolbox, Roy Norris, and Lawrence Bittaker?
I mean, their story's been out there for a long time, and, you know, I would think that anybody that's really into true crime probably has heard it before.
Right.
But there's also probably people that have probably heard the moniker, the Toolbox Killers, but don't know really about the story.
Right. Because I don't think there's been any sort of docuseries. That usually makes people aware, like all these Bundy and Gacy ones you see.
I mean, they fucking...
I haven't seen one about these two, but man, that'd be pretty sick.
Just a couple little documents I saw, but fucking... The one thing about them, though, is I think the moniker was so fucking cool. And, of course, this is coming out of California.
Right.
But right off the bat, there was an exploitation movie called fucking Toolbox Killers.
Oh, okay.
That, you know, was a fucking a slasher fucking exploitation. It was good shit. Yeah. And then it was done later on, Toolbox Murders. Toby Hooper did it.
Right.
But anyway, it doesn't have anything to do with the real the case, shit, though.
Right.
This is what they called it.
But the name was probably so, you're like, oh, man, we got to use that.
Right. I mean, any of us would have been doing that, right? As we've been discussing, though, these two are brutal as hell, probably a close tie with the Hillside Stranglers when it comes to sadism and just absolute savagery. I think our true crime listeners that aren't really familiar with the details of this may be shocked because it's that fucking sick. Some of the worst stuff that I've seen doing the true crime, just absolutely horrible, especially awful. The fact that it's kids.
Right.
You know, that's just fucked up.
Teenagers.
Next week isn't too far off. I've been doing some research for our next week episode, and that motherfucker also with the kids, you know, it's fucked up. Like with most of these killers that kill in pairs, usually one of them is the dominant personality. And we talked with Harold Schechter about this. Of course, he talked about the term folie à deux, which is a French word, so I sound really important and smart right there. But that's where the same mental or disorder can affect both people.
Right.
And these two seem to feed off each other. Leopold and Loeb, I mean, we've done them before. But Bideker definitely seems to be the dominant of the two.
Oh, yeah, I never would have seen Norris probably even committing a homicide.
No.
Without Bideker.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's literally like one wouldn't have done it without the other.
He for real got sick to his stomach with the first one, so right. I don't think he could have gone through with it. But
yeah, I don't think so either. But like we'll talk about, Bideker said, you know, he would have never been raping people if it wasn't for Roy Norris.
Right. So
it's feeding
off each other.
Now, Chris, Bideker is born in Pittsburgh in 1940, but his parents didn't want to have kids. So
he's a Steelers fan.
He was Steelers fan, apparently, and he was adopted. So we've seen that shit before.
Yeah, like, also, not only was he adopted, so, like, he also had that abandonment thing going on in his head, but then his dad was in, like, the Air Force or did something with airplanes. They went all over the fucking place, like... So he never really made any close friends or stayed anywhere a long time.
Right.
So I think that just kind of fucked with him.
Yeah, I think so too.
Like, even though this family wanted me, they kind of don't want me in a way. You know
right.
what I'm saying?
Right. And we've seen it before with like cases like Bundy, Chris, where they find out about it, you know, later, and it really right. fucks with them
fucks
and everything.
With their head,
so
yeah.
Hard to say, but his adoptive parents are the ones that gave him the last name of Bideker. And his adoptive father, as you said, worked, you know, moved around a lot. He was in that aviation field. And so he starts his life of crime early, starts doing a little shoplifting. He ends up getting arrested at age 12.
He loved to shoplift like this
oh,
fucking
yeah.
guy.
Yeah, it was like a game to him.
Like he's fucking Charles Ng and shit.
Little Charles Ng here. He would later say that he did crimes like this to compensate for a lack of love and attention at home. Now, Joey, we've seen this kind of shit before. They start out with the small crimes and kind of build up. But do you think that Bideker's time when he gets busted in the California Youth Authority was where he kind of learned some of the shit that he wound up doing?
I mean, his escalation was already going on, so he was already headed that way. But, like, definitely, in my opinion, any kind of fucking youth holding facility or detention center is, like... That's fucking Thunderdome right there.
Right.
I never went to juvie.
Manson, Hans Ram, these guys that did like a lot of time in those fucking absolutely like brutalized.
I never went to any of them, but a lot of my friends did go to juvie and shit, and fucking like seeing how they came back was always different than how they went in.
Really?
And then, you know, I was locked up in adult penitentiary here in Illinois, and you would see the younger kids that came in from the juvenile that came into prison,
right?
The way they acted and how, man, like,
wow.
Because normally, like, people in a prison, they're just trying to do their time. Like,
right.
You're there to fucking do your shit. You get fucking put in line pretty quick not to fucking bother the situation. So you get these motherfuckers that come in just fucking acting wild. And
right.
It's like, they're going to learn and they're going to fucking fall in line eventually, but it's a whole different ball game, and that's because where they came from.
Right.
Motherfuckers right. that age, they ain't got no fucking regard for consequence or,
right.
you know.
That's true, man. That's true. That's a good point, man. It's amazing that Bideker had an IQ of 138, but he found school boring and tedious, so he drops out in 1957. He's 17, but within a year of dropping out.
His IQ, he was a genius, but he had no fucking common sense.
Yeah,
some of the stuff, yeah, they talked about what he said on the stand.
Like, no common sense, like, dude.
Car theft, he goes on this crime spree. Car theft, hit and run, evading arrest. So he's doing some time, as we mentioned, in juvie. He turns 18, though. He finds out that his adoptive parents abandoned him and moved out of state. So that's fucked up. He would never see them again. And I'm thinking that would definitely have an impact on an 18-year-old kid coming right out of juvie.
Wouldn't you think so?
Like, maybe use some family to help him kind of get himself started. But
they
just
wanted just
on
to,
his own.
I guess, have this kid not be raised in a orphanage or whatever, because they adopted the kid 18 years old. All right, we're done. We did our job with you.
Right.
out.
Exactly. Exactly. So that's definitely got to fuck with his self-esteem. You know, you talk about that inner rage. It's no wonder that he turned into what he did, you know. Now, Chris, Roy Norris is born in 1948, so he's a little younger, in Colorado. But his childhood had some similarities to Bittaker. I was kind of surprised.
His mom liked drugs.
A little bit.
Good. Drugs are good.
Right.
A little bit of crack. I mean, right. It wasn't crack then yet. But anyway, yeah, fucking said he got sexually abused in foster homes when he was getting tossed around. So
yeah, he was like in and out of foster homes and yeah, just that stuff.
All over the place. Like, again, abandonment shit. And
right.
Whatever.
Yeah, I guys read together. Something where he said he was, you know, refused like food at times and, you know, basic necessities, like really pretty harsh treatment. Yeah, so
fuck that.
Fucking pussy.
Fucking pussy.
Now, Joey, the family that abused Norris was apparently Hispanic, and he would later claim this was the reason he was very prejudiced toward Hispanics. Did you see anything about that?
I didn't really see where it fucking would have really affected any other trajectory that he was headed on.
Right.
He probably did harbor some kind of animosity.
Right.
Only one of the victims, I think, had any kind of Hispanic
background.
Yeah,
I think one of them, the mother was Hispanic,
yeah,
I believe.
And most of their crimes were fucking acts of opportunity.
Right.
They weren't following these certain people.
Yeah, true.
The best they did was, you know, we'll talk about it, but the first victim, they kind of followed her just on the street, though. Not right. like casing her or anything like that.
Right.
So they were a lot more optimistic or opportunistic. So
yeah,
he probably did harbor some kind of fucking attitude towards that. And plus, right. they were in prison. I can't imagine, like, in the 70s, like, gangs and segregation among the inmates back then
right.
was probably even way more extreme than it is now. You
oh,
know?
Probably.
You go in there and you kind of, like, stick with your own is the thing.
Right.
But anyway, back then, yeah, I'm sure fucking he was getting fed all kinds of fucking shit from, like, white supremacists out there.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And, I mean, just like Panzram, he had that hatred of the priests because of what happened to him in juvie, you know. So that yep. Definitely sticks with him. Now, Norris would claim that he was 16 and living with his birth parents when he visited the home of a female relative who was in her early 20s. He had some sexually suggestive shit going
like he was
on.
Trying to hit on her, like right? his an aunt or some shit.
Yeah, she
dude.
Threw him out of the fucking
She's
house.
Like, son of a bitch.
And right? told his dad.
And his dad's like, I'm oh, going to beat your ass, dude. Right?
Yeah, I mean, back in the day, like, that's definitely some ass-whipping shit. He stole his dad's car and drove to the Rocky Mountains, tried to kill himself. I read this and I had to read it twice. Injecting air into
an
his
artery
veins.
Or whatever, yeah, trying to.
I never heard of that before.
Blow up your heart.
Right.
Like, I've never heard of that, though.
Yeah, that's like a junkie's fucking, I can't remember, like a dead shot, but shooting somebody up with nothing in the needle and shit. That's like almost guaranteed death right
oh,
there.
Oh, wow. I'd never heard of that before. I was like, what the fuck? So pretty strange way to kill yourself, but apparently not in the junkie world. So you probably learned that shit in prison. Right. I mean, that's probably where he learned it.
You're probably right about that.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. Norris was returned to his birth parents, who told him and his younger sister they didn't want them and planned on divorcing when they reached 18. So pretty fucking similar in ways to Bittaker with that, you know. Definitely tough to hear that as a kid and that whole feeling of rejection.
Yeah.
It's oddly similar, their stories. I mean, really, it's very interesting. So Chris, a year later, though, Norris drops out of school, joins the Navy, 1965.
Went to Vietnam.
He did. But he didn't see any combat, so that was good.
Maybe that would have helped. No, probably not.
Take his aggression out
right?
or something,
yeah.
you know? He was stationed in San Diego and honorably discharged, I saw, in 1969. Did you see where they found that he had a severe schizoid personality? I think it was
I saw
while he was still in.
It. Yeah, something about it. I don't remember any details about it. I didn't see any major details, but I saw that. Yeah, he was schizophrenic, if it's what they said. But
yeah, I was surprised because, you know, they mention it like it happened before he got out of the Navy. And then, but they gave him like an honorable discharge and just kind of like, you're on your own.
Right.
Go do your
thing.
It's
kind of weird,
which is
you know.
Not a good idea.
Right. But it was in his record that he had this schizoid personality. Now, within a few days of being let out of juvie, Bittaker wants to ramp up his career as a criminal, stealing a car, driving across state lines in 1959. He gets arrested and found guilty, gets an 18-month sentence in Oklahoma. So he's doing some fucking time. Gets transferred to a Missouri prison where he moved to Los Angeles. After that, he was arrested for robbery after only days of getting there.
Not wasting any time. Don't give no fucks.
No. He winds up getting sentenced to 15 fucking years after that. Prison psychiatrist said he was having a concealed hostility. So that's probably pretty appropriate here. He's also very manipulative, which is a problem when he's with Norris. So
right.
And
it's his IQ. He knows how to work people.
Yeah. He winds up getting paroled in 1963, but then he ends up back in prison for a parole violation in 1964. So he just cannot stay out. He's considered a borderline psychopath at that point and gets paroled again. In 1967, Joey, it is fucking amazing how they keep letting him out. I mean, is it just the overcrowding issues, you think, or what?
That, and I mean, fucking, I don't know. I don't know what was going on with prison systems back then, but right. There might have been some kind of reform out there on the West Coast. Or
right.
For sure.
Or whatever it was, but with him, I think... I'm not saying that they should have kept him locked up forever because if fucking he was eligible to get out, he's eligible to get out. Right, that's just what it is. Yeah. But if you're fucking like sensing a fucking issue with this person, why not fucking make sure they're getting some help, like medically?
Right, definitely. And that just like diagnose them with this shit and then be like, go ahead and go though.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, it's amazing that they, you know, it's kind of like what we were talking about with the Priest scandal, just kind of bumping them down the road, not really, you know, taking the time out to try to fix the situation, right. Just kind of bumping them along. It's fucked up. So, Chris, did you read about an incident where he stole a steak at a grocery store?
You know what's fucked up? I've heard of people doing that, too, and getting caught for like stealing motherfucking steak. Trailer Park Boys with
stealing the meat?
Or steak. Yeah, fuck, dude, like shit like that.
No, I'm not going to put out his name right now, but the funniest shit in the world is one of my friends. He's fucking young and he's learning about life, but he's a fucking idiot.
Right.
But whatever. He hits me up and he was like, oh, yeah, I got to go to court. And I'm like, what the fuck you got to go to court for? He's like, I got caught stealing. I was like, oh, my God.
Oh,
what?
Man.
And what were you stealing? From Walmart, I was stealing Pepsi and fried chicken. Oh, my God. And, dude, I was like, get the fuck out of here. You got to be a fucking idiot. And to make matters worse, I was like, what'd your job think about all that? Because he fucking works for Tyson.
No,
it's like you got busted stealing chicken. You got chicken at your goddamn factory,
right?
Anyway, yeah. Weird. So fucking, you were just talking about that though. Like basically the same fucking thing. Like,
yeah, just dumb shit.
Why
just
would you do shit. That?
Well, that Robert Durst, he did the same thing God. With like a ham sandwich or something like that. He's a fucking millionaire.
So. Yeah, but yeah, the fucking one of the clerks fucking catches him and like
that's how he got caught.
Yeah. Dude stabs her in the chest with a fucking knife.
Yeah, out in the parking lot. Dude. Yeah. So he's not having any fucking part of that shit. So he gets sent, Chris, back to prison, San Luis Obispo, and that's an important part of the story here.
Oh, yeah.
So back to Roy Norris. He starts his life of crime after he gets out of the Navy. He's 8 years younger than Bittaker, so he's a little behind. Got some ground to make up here. So he commits rape and assault with the intention to commit rape. This is in 1969, so right around the time he got out of the Navy. He stalked and viciously attacked a student at San Diego State University.
Like, out of nowhere, just slams her with a rock and bashes her head on the fucking
drags
sidewalk.
Her off into the bushes.
Holy fuck, dude.
Yeah, pretty fucked up. Smashing her head repeatedly on the sidewalk. I mean, whoa. He winds up getting 5 years at Atascadero State Prison or State Hospital. And, of course, that was made famous, at least to me, in the true crime world with Ed Kemper was there.
Hell yeah.
So that's where Kemper was. And very close, within a year or two, one got out, the other one got there. I think it was Roy Norris first and then Kemper right after he got out. So
like two big ass motherfuckers.
Yeah, right.
Well, not bit. Roy Norris ain't that big.
No. He gets out in 75. He attacks a woman on the street, dragging her off into some bushes and raping her. The victim saw him riding his motorcycle after the incident, told the police, and he's arrested and convicted and sent to prison at San Luis Obispo, where he would, of course, finally meet up with his soulmate,
Lawrence,
his buddy, Bittaker. Lawrence Pliers Bittaker. So. Now, Joey, about a year into the sentence, Norris and Bittaker would finally become friends. And we've seen this thing before with these criminals meeting up in prison and coming up with these ideas.
Yeah, I mean, that's what happens. I mean, you fucking end
nothing
up spending
but time.
Right? Yeah, and you're spending part of your life with someone. So, I mean, you do, you know, create friendships, like, oh, for sure. Real. But if you're both on the fucking shady side of fucking certain situations,
right,
and you put those together when you get out, yeah, we see that. And, you know, we were talking Clutter Murders.
Yeah, that was a
Kansas,
good one.
And that was exactly the same situation.
Right.
Leonard Lake and Charles Ng, you know, they met in jail. I don't know. So, yeah, you get two criminals, and it's like perfect storm.
Right.
It's funny that, you know, we brought up the Clutter Murders again real fast because I watched the In Cold Blood movie with fucking Robert Blake.
Oh, cool. Yeah, I watched it too. That's
and I had watched it before when I first got in. It kind of put me to sleep. And I was like, oh, that movie must have sucked. And then so I put it in again the other night. I watched it. I was like, oh, actually, it's pretty good.
It is pretty good.
And but, yeah, the, you know, then what he became and ended up doing, but still, yeah, the Clutter Murders, I saw it in the notes, I was like, yeah. Fuck yeah.
Clutter Murders is a good one, and that's a big episode with our listeners.
Hell yeah.
Listens to that
fuck
one.
Yeah.
Now, Chris, these two definitely feed off each other, but Bittaker had not committed a sex crime, and Norris would say he was impressed with Bittaker's violent side, the way he was able to protect him while they were in prison.
He had him under his wings.
Yeah, so these
squirrel
two...
Squirrel master.
The squirrel man, yeah.
These two would talk about their fantasy to rape one girl for each teenage year between 13 and 19.
That's fucked up, man.
What kind of fucked up thing is that to even fucking say? That's crazy.
Dude, they talked about wanting to do terrible shit, and they did it, but...
Yeah.
When they get together and that's the first thing, maybe not the first thing, but it's like, hey, bro, you know what I want to do?
Yeah, exactly.
Like, if you get that, how do you get that vibe that that dude wants the same? Oh, fuck
yeah. They were attracted to the fucking young girls to begin with.
Right.
But also, their idea is that these will be easier victims for them.
Right, because they won't be, they can snatch them up quicker.
They can snatch them up, they can fucking lure them with drugs and, you know, a home, you know, or what, because some of these people are like down and out and shit, so.
Right.
But yeah, no, they were both definitely sick motherfuckers thinking up some shit together.
Yeah, dude, for sure.
Like, for real, you're just sitting there, hey, bro, you want to go rape some kids with
be like
you
just kick back fuck and you're
yeah,
fucking,
who breaks the ice in that conversation?
You're just hanging out in your cell like, bro, you know it's really tight. Dude, young pussy like.
Right, like what the
yeah
fuck?
It's fucked up. So Bittaker gets out in 1978. He moves to Los Angeles. He gets a job as a mechanic making $1,000
maybe
a week.
That's where he got the nickname Pliers.
Possibly.
As a mechanic.
That seems
he was
incredibly
money,
high
yeah.
Because if you do the math, I Googled it. What was $1,000 equivalent to in today's money? We're talking $4,600 a week. That's crazy. So imagine that. He's got a job like that and he does some stupid shit like this.
Right.
Like
you
said,
you
Chris,
that?
No common sense.
No common sense, yeah.
No.
But you can afford a murder, Mac.
That's right. That's right. Totally yeah, he's only a couple Mac. Years old, so it's pretty styling. Norris gets out only a few months later. He gets a job as an electrician, another job where you'd make it some pretty damn good money.
Hell yeah, dude.
So he moves in with his mom in Redondo Beach, but doesn't seem to learn his lesson. He winds up raping a woman and taking her out in the desert and leaving her out there. So, pretty fucked up.
I mean, get back into it.
Real
I mean,
gentleman.
What the fuck?
So, soon after that, 1979, Norris got a letter from Bittaker, back when they wrote letters. And they met up to discuss their fantasy of raping teenage girls. It was just so fucking disturbing. They decided they needed a van. They decided they needed a van, Chris. So what did they go with?
They went with a 1977 GMC Silver Van, fucking sliding door on the passenger side, no windows, fucking top notch, man.
That's exactly what they wanted, the sliding door, so they could just fucking snatch them up. And that's exactly what they fucking did. They put a bed in there. They got a cooler.
They got a toolbox.
Toolbox.
And that's the fucking murder Mac.
That's the recording equipment.
Yep.
So they got everything set up in the murder Mac. So that's what they that's what they're calling it. Now, Joey, from February to June in 1979, these motherfuckers would do 20 practice runs with teenagers to test this shit out. And I saw they found an isolated road with a gate and replaced the lock with their own lock. That's pretty fucking smart.
Yeah. And fucking Norris, he's like, I mean, I saw some things. He was pretty big into the fucking drug game at that point. Like,
yeah.
At least in weed.
Marijuana,
you know?
Right.
And so, yeah, he's fucking, while they're doing these practice runs, he's got an easy lure. He's like, oh, you want to go smoke some marijuana? I got the best on the West, you know, fucking the chronic, if you will. Right. But, you know, the fact they did the test runs and then they found the perfect isolated spot that they wanted to do their crimes. Like, they had a vehicle, they had a fucking destination, and they had a fucking age range of victims. Like, all they had to do was put the pieces together.
Right.
But they found this place, and yeah, I saw it. I think it had a lock on it, but you could tell it was one that hadn't been open forever.
Right. So they figured nobody was
coming.
Yeah,
who the hell is
going
to come up here? So they fucking threw their own on there. So every time they got out there, they could just fucking cruise
lock
through
it behind them. And yeah, pretty fucking smart shit. So June 24th, 1979, they would abduct and kill their very first victim, 16-year-old Lucinda Schaefer. They had just finished installing the bed in the back of the van with their tools stored beneath it with a cooler, as we mentioned. They're heading to the beach. They're drinking beer, Chris, smoking some weed. They're looking for girls. Taking all kinds of pictures of them.
Now you got to think, before this even happened, they did a shit ton of test runs, dude. Like,
right,
dude,
yeah.
Like, fucking stalking the girls out.
20 of them.
Yeah, like 20 test runs, like, trying to figure out the best way to pick these children up and do their bad shit.
That's some fucking determination there, right?
Right. Like, I mean, I'm doing test runs of what we're going to do.
So, they saw Lucinda. They tried to get her into the van with the offers of some beer and some pot. She refuses. So they parked the van up ahead. This is some devious shit. Norris is acting like he's fixing
Fixing something in the van and just like.
And she walks by and he just fucking snatches her up, throws her in the back, van. And boom, they're gone.
Hence, rape van.
Exactly. They would turn up the radio on full blast like they did in subsequent murders to drown out the screaming.
Deep Purple going fucking loud.
Loud as fuck in that bitch, dude.
Norris binds the girl in duct tape in the back of the van. Bittaker's driving into the San Gabriel Mountains, very mountainous terrain. Like we mentioned, this remote road they had locked with their own lock. Norris rapes her first. Bittaker apparently led him because he was the one that took the most risk by being out there and snatching her up. So Bittaker takes a walk, then Bittaker rapes her before Norris would do it again. So it's just shitty, awful stuff.
Like, the fact they're just like straight up like, yeah, this is fucking party time.
Yeah, dude. It's so Holy fucking disturbing, man. The victim asked if she would be able to pray if they intended to kill her, and they told her she would. So Bittaker rapes her a second time.
And never let her pray.
No, he did not, Chris. Norris would try to strangle her, but he couldn't. And like Joey was saying, he gets sick.
Yeah, he fucking threw up, couldn't do it. He's like trying to do it with his hands or whatever. So Bittaker takes a wire clothes hanger.
Right.
Wraps around her neck, takes a pair of pliers, and twists the shit out of it.
Yep.
Until, yeah, she died. And like they said that. When they found the body, the wire was like twisted so tight. The ring was about the size of a silver dollar.
I saw that. Yeah, that's fucked up. And of course, we talked about shit like that with Gacy, where he would put something around their neck, not the wire hanger, but like a rope, and he would twist to get it to where it, like a stick, and tighten it up to where they couldn't breathe. So that's an interesting. We see a lot of this with these serial killers, where you wonder, is it just the law of averages that some of them are going to do shit that the others did, or how much of it is like Bittaker, you know, right. knew? But yeah, you know, that would have been right around the same time as Gacy. I don't think Gacy would have been caught by then.
So. And it wasn't the exact same. He used the fucking the garrote or whatever,
right?
With the fucking the stick through it,
right?
A little more, a better grip, I would think.
Yeah, the wire hanger is just fucking vicious. And like you said, Chris, with a pair of pliers, just tightening it up. My tighter God.
Dude, this is a mechanic. He's like, fuck, he's like probably using a ratchet.
Probably like murder ratchet.
There you go. Joey, she begged them to let her pray, but as we said, no fucking dice. He didn't let her.
No, did not. You know, fuck your God. He isn't here right now, is basically what he was saying. And
right.
You know that, honestly, they probably got a kick out of that and was laughing about it later.
Oh, probably.
For it to even be a fucking part of the story, because they obviously had to tell the cops during the interrogations.
That's true.
Or that never would have came out.
That's true.
Right.
Like, they weren't recording that one.
Right, exactly. They wrap her up in a shower curtain and toss her body into a canyon, figuring that the animals are going to eat her, there'd be nothing left. Only 2 weeks later, though, July of 79, they would murder again. This time, though, 18-year-old Andrea Hall, she was hitchhiking and actually got picked up by another vehicle. I thought this was interesting. They saw her. She gets picked up by another vehicle. They follow that vehicle until she gets out, so and then they approached her. Yeah.
Like, straight up, like, no, we need that one, basically.
Yeah, I mean, that's just fucked up, like, the way they did this shit. Like we said, just the creepy rape van stuff. Apparently, Bittaker's driving again. Norris is hiding under the bed. And Bittaker uses the phrase, you want a cold drink.
Yeah, because they got that cooler back there. They got beers, sodas, what all that.
And you're making all that money. You got all the things.
It's fucking hot as shit in California.
And Norris is waiting because he gets the cue, and then she comes in there to get a drink. He grabs her, and of course, they do the same thing. They take her up to the mountains. They're raping her back and forth. I mean, it's just fucking horrible. Bittaker took two Polaroid pictures of her before putting an ice pick into one ear, then flips her over and does the same thing to the other ear.
Stomps on the motherfucking ice pick.
Breaks like, the fucking handle off while he's stomping on it. So that's how hard he was stomping on it. But I'm wondering if they got the idea of taking these pictures before they killed from Harvey Glattman, the glamour girl slayer. We talked about
could
him.
Have, yeah.
Many times he comes up in BTK, comes up in multiple episodes we've done. A very unknown guy, Chris. We did him in the early days.
Right,
we did Glattman. So if you haven't heard that episode, go give that a listen, because you'll see a lot of similarities with these guys and Glattman, because Glattman's thing was he took their pictures like tied up and then he told them, now pictures. I'm going to kill you. And then he took pictures of their expression.
Right, which they did that too.
Holy absolutely horrible. And these guys are doing the same shit. So when I searched the case on Google, I was coming up with Glattman articles and pictures. So there's definitely some tie to those case for them being inspired maybe by Glattman.
Never admitted it.
No. So it's just crazy. Now, Chris, it would be 2 months before they would strike again, though. 1979, September, they see a couple of girls hitchhiking. What was the deal with this one, man?
Yeah, there was two victims of Jackie Gilman, who was 15, and Leah Lamp, who was 13.
Right.
And these poor girls.
Oh, my God.
These poor girls had to watch each other getting raped for hours and like.
Well, the one Lamp, they didn't rape her, but she had to sit there watch the other one.
That's right. Rape. But then they would like be in the van, and one dude would stay awake, keep him watch, and the other one would just sleep in the bed with the girls there, which is really fucking fucked up, dude.
Right.
But yeah.
But hitchhiking, though, Chris, I mean, it was so common back then.
Always in the 70s. That's how everybody got around, dude.
Right. But how many stories have we done where the girls hitchhiking get picked up and shit happens?
All kinds of stories.
Right. It's too bad, really. Now, Joey, what went on with these two? Because this was very fucked up, as Chris said. You know, they're taking pictures. They're recording some shit now.
Yeah, I mean, even fucking before that, they go up to the fucking, their road, their fucking kill spot, you know.
Right, which they, for the most part, went to the same spot. Yeah. It was that yellow box or whatever.
Yeah, the power, or the power. They said it was the fucking, the hydrant.
Yeah,
right.
Anyway, fucking, really, to be honest, too, like, man, that spot where they fucking were doing it at, it was pretty fucking ingenious, because if he hadn't brought them back to them bodies, they wouldn't have found him. And they said the fucking weather, the rains came right after that. And if fucking he hadn't showed them then, they would have been way washed out. They couldn't have ever found that shit. So they were like fucking hurling them off the fucking mountains.
Wow.
It was crazy. But anyway, when they fucking abducted these two girls, they take them up there, and of course they go off the fucking path, and they're on this fucking gravel road now, fucking right. The girls are freaking out, and when you get up there, the 13-year-old, she tries to fucking open the door to the van,
right,
and flee, and he fucking Norris blasts her in the head with a fucking bag full of lead weights.
Yeah,
like, holy shit.
Up. Yeah, to a 13-year-old fucking
girl. Right.
Yeah, so she's unconscious for a minute. So then they grab the 15-year-old and, you know, subdue her, and, you know, that's how it goes down. But yeah, fucking Bittaker, you know, he's like, grab the tape recorder, because he was all about that shit.
About it.
Right.
And they fucking recorded, you know, like I said, they raped the one girl like over and over and over, and like fucking filmed it. And they fucking got so many pictures. You could see a couple online. They didn't release a lot of them, but the Polaroids are really creepy, because they like basically taking pornographic pictures of these young children.
Right.
And fucking like they were posing, and fucking she was like looking happy. And it was like, why are you looking happy? You know, fucking. And she was like, well, I thought that's what you guys wanted. He's like, no, you can fucking be as frightened scream as you want, scream your fucking head off.
Right.
And you know, they were doing that, and then, you know, something else that was crazy too is like I can't remember, was it her with the fucking sledgehammer?
Yeah. No, that was the last
one. Okay, the last one, yeah, so we'll wait on that. But no, they fucking, you know, recorded all this shit, which they'll do with the next one, and
right,
these tapes, they fucking buried them in a cemetery,
right,
supposedly.
But then when the cops questioned him about it, he was like, I don't know where they are.
And,
they've
never, ever recovered those. So right. Those have never fucking shown up.
Right. But. Yeah, boy, that would be a true crime find to get those.
Oh, God.
My God. It was almost 2 months, though, before they would murder their last victim, probably the worst of them all. Halloween night, 1979. 16-year-old Lynette Ledford was hitchhiking home from a Halloween party in Los Angeles. She accepts the ride since she recognized Bittaker because he was a customer of hers at McDonald's where she worked. And of course, that would seal her fate, because
right,
then
probably
she
always
gets
nice
in.
Coming in McDonald's all the yeah. time. Like, oh,
yeah.
Hey,
yeah, okay. Seems like a nice guy. Then Norris drove the
probably
van.
Probably smoked weed with him before.
That's right.
Probably.
With that Mac.
Yeah.
Norris drove this time as Bittaker torments the poor girl in the back. He's slapping her. He's laughing. He's telling her to scream. Then there was something about he wanted her to pretend he was his cousin.
I saw that,
what
dude.
What the fuck,
like,
with that?
Be my cousin.
Yeah.
Was that his cousin that he made the sexual advances on, or was it his aunt?
I think it was an aunt.
Okay, I thought so too.
Yeah.
Probably a cousin at some point too.
Right.
So, probably.
Somewhere down the family tree.
So he's repeatedly hitting her with his fists, and then later he's hitting her with a fucking hammer.
A fucking sledgehammer.
Yeah. Like, it keeps ramping up here. First it's a regular hammer and it builds up, but he's recording this while he's hitting her with a hammer.
Audio recording, yeah.
Yeah, torturing her with pliers, which fucked up.
And what it was is fucking Bittaker rapes her.
Right.
And then fucking Norris is going to rape her.
Right.
And he was like, she wasn't fucking crying as much for him while he was raping her than he was for Bittaker.
That's why he did it.
And he was like, what the fuck? So he grabbed the fucking sledgehammer and smashed her in the elbows.
Like, repeatedly.
Yeah, and they said like as hard as he could too. Like,
that's fucked up.
Oh my God. Yeah, I'll cry now.
Dude.
And then you're going to rape me.
Anybody would be fucking screaming.
And this is what they're fucking recording.
Right.
Like, they're recording all this shit.
Dude.
Yeah, she is pleading and screaming. I mean, it's fucking sick.
It is some fucking excessive foreplay.
Yeah, a little like bit. A little bit. They continued to record this whole thing. Yeah. He hits her more than 20 times on the elbow with a sledgehammer. Imagine that.
I mean, how does a sledgehammer even fucking...
I don't know how she had an arm.
Yeah, how's it not decimate? He's a pussy.
That's fucked.
Unless he's just like doing the...
I mean, can he go to a carnival and do the bell ring? I mean, he's got to fucking do that. I can't even imagine how horrible and terrifying this would have been for her. You hear some of it, a little bit of it online. It is absolute horror show stuff. I read through the transcript and wanted to fucking puke. I mean, it's so fucking bad. Absolute sickness. I mean, I just can't believe it. Chris, eventually they would strangle her with that wire coat hanger like they'd done, and right. they decide to do a little something different.
They want to see the police's reaction shit. They just throw the body in somebody's fucking yard, front yard, basically.
Right.
And then next day, a jog in the morning, jogger comes by and sees that, and everybody's like, holy fuck.
Yeah, I think he posed the body, too, if I'm not mistaken, but I'm not sure on that. Joey, the autopsy would reveal the horrific injuries she sustained, like some internal injuries to her genitalia as well as her rectum, what Bittaker was doing with the pliers. I mean, my fucking God.
He was reshaping that cunt.
Absolutely
awful, man.
No, it was fucking crazy shit. And, you know, really, like you said, it was all fucking recorded, and the sound clips just fucking... It was too much for a lot of people to handle, just the sound.
Yeah, this case reminds me of how we were looking at the Coral case and what he was doing to him in Burdella.
Yep.
With the glass rods and the dick and breaking
sparklers and the
sparklers. Yeah.
That's how this reminds me of this, towards how a woman must feel thinking about that happening.
God, yeah.
Fucking horrible, man. So... You know, you're talking about as much extreme violence as you can imagine, Joey. You think that pent-up anger is where that shit comes from?
Oh, yeah, fucking. Well, I think it's pent-up anger. That's where it started at. Right. And after time, the more killing you do, like we've seen it, you know, with Hillside Stranglers and a few others, like they start getting more addicted to it, where they fucking pretty much have to do a killing because they're just so worked up about it. And I feel like these guys were definitely in that category.
Yeah.
Not to mention they had fucking premeditated a whole fucking summer or year of fucking raping, you know, between 12 and 18 or whatever it was.
13 seven and 19, fucking.
It's just crazy. Like,
it is.
But I can't remember. I was going to say something else, but I forget. That's fine.
So it was Norris who would end up getting the two busted for these crimes. He tells a fucking convict they knew. Never a good fucking thing.
And that's
thing
what I was going to say. That's what I forgot, is they wouldn't have got caught
if fucking Norris didn't.
Well, yeah, because he blabbed, but also by posing that body in the fucking yard. Like, they weren't even aware where none of these bodies were at or anything.
Exactly.
These were all just fucking missing kids.
This is pre-DNA now. Exactly. If they would have held on to that DNA, they might have got caught later on.
Right, yeah.
But at the time, they would have got away with
it. Yeah, the cops just had no leads on where any of the bodies were, or the kids, or if they were just missing or what.
Right.
So they were in the clear as far as, like, in trouble with the... It wasn't like Hillside Stranglers where you're dropping them all over the place and every day the cops are finding the shit.
Right, right.
Like, they found this one now in this yard and now it's like, holy fuck.
Right.
And then, like you said, then he goes to prison and fucking wants to talk to fucking Joe Jackson or whatever.
Yeah, Joseph Jackson, a prison buddy. Right. He's telling him about it.
He wasn't shoeless.
Even before that, there was that one girl they raped her and she got away and she couldn't fucking...
Identify
them, but they knew that they were driving a silver fucking van.
Right.
So when Jackson does this thing about going to the lawyer and shit, tells them what they're driving, fucking
right.
Holy shit.
Yeah. Right. So So Joe Jackson also knew Bittaker, so they were buddies, and you know they're sharing in the same fantasy because he was also about taking pictures of these young girls going to the beach and all this stuff.
Which, as far as we know, that was the extent of anything he did.
Right, exactly. Now, Joseph tells his attorney, as Chris, you mentioned, the attorney says, you need to go to the cops, but nobody wants to talk to him.
Right, they didn't believe him at first, fucking, because... And then, like I said, he mentioned that they're driving around in a silver van.
Right.
And the girl that got away from them raping her.
Which, right.
Good for her, fuck yeah.
Yeah.
Like
she finally identifies
so that they come up with the pictures and a picture lineup, and she picks out 32 pictures. They're like, oh, fuck. All right, we're on to something here.
Exactly, exactly. And I'm sure the cops would have known they did time together. Right. So it would have been a likely, you know, combination there. But the cops finally in Hermosa Beach believe him, but the other ones are like, get out of here.
Right.
You know, like, what the fuck? I'm trying to fucking turn this shit in, you know? The police followed these two, and they see Norris, as you pointed out, Joey, selling dope. So he, you know, they openly doing it, so they could bust him, obviously, parole violation. They said Bittaker also had some drugs on him. He was staying at a fucking motel, which blows my mind, making $4,600 a week and living in a fucking hotel. But, yeah, just like you said, just dumb, weird, like, smarter guy as that was, doing some stupid shit.
Fuck it, living in a hotel.
Yeah, who cares? I guess.
Everything gets clean for you, fuck
right? Free cable. They searched the van and found the tape from Lynette. So they find that tape they just made, and that was all the fucking evidence they needed to get these motherfuckers. But how awful is it that that poor girl's mother had to identify her daughter's voice on that tape?
Yeah.
Dude,
I can't even imagine
that fucking shit, dude. Like, the way the jury and everything, everybody reacted to the tape anyway, being that child's parent, dude, I'd fucking flip my shit.
Right?
Like, for real, I'd be the next one being on trial. Oh, yeah,
I don't know how you wouldn't. I mean, I just read the transcript, and I've heard little bits and pieces of that screaming and shit. It is absolutely horrific. And knowing that the mother had to sit through that is incomprehensible to me as a human being, and let alone a parent or grandparent. That is just fucked up. And Chris, as if that wasn't bad enough to lose a child, to hear some shit like that would just be something I can't imagine.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Stick with you forever,
fuck,
man.
Fuck that, nonstop. I feel like you'd probably go into some kind of huge, deep depression and just...
Oh, yeah.
It's stuck in your brain all the time. Somebody might just be like, I can't do this anymore, and fucking take their own life.
Yeah, because I mean, we've seen that with the cops. I can't do this anymore, dude. You know, the cops, even, that we've talked about, there's one in this story, you know, it's like, holy shit, you know? The police find a bracelet from one of the victims in Norris's apartment, and also 500 Polaroids of young girls in both of their places. Norris winds up confessing to being part of it, but said that Bittaker was more involved in the killing than he was.
He's the mastermind, dude.
Yeah.
Like, I'm going to narc on him, too, so you don't give me the death sentence, basically.
Pretty much, yeah.
Like, fuck it. I got caught first. I'm
going to spill the beans.
Yeah, I'm going to get the better sentence. Fuck off.
I mean, he showed him the fucking sights and everything.
Yeah, he went up to the mountains and helped him recover some of the bodies. Two of them were never found, though. So there was the one posed that they got, obviously, and then there were two others that they found, but they didn't. So.
The 13- and 15-year-old, they found them, and then the Jacqueline, I think. But yeah,
the one with the ice pick. The ice pick was still in her skull when they found the skull. That's fucked up.
They just had no regard, dude. Like,
no.
Just like toss it.
Right? Yeah, just unbelievable. Now, Joey, we see these cases before with more than one perpetrator. The, you know, Norris, he winds up getting a plea bargain, so he doesn't get sentenced to death. But
I mean, you guys are fucking popped. Like, you're in trouble. You're ex-cons to begin with. You're fucking not seeing daylight again.
Right.
If you're a motherfucker that's fucking willing to fucking blab your mouth first, you're going to save your fucking life. Now, of course, I guess back then there was still a fear of fucking actually being executed.
Right.
Not too much of it anymore. But,
not too much. Not California.
But I guess back then, so he was like, yeah, fuck that. Take the death sentence off the table for me.
Right.
And I'll fucking testify against him. I'll show you where the bodies are.
Right. He still gets a 45-year sentence. Yeah. So, but he's got the chance for parole. Of course, he's never getting out. Chris, the 3-week Bittaker trial would provide a horror show for the jury. That 17-minute tape of Lynette Ledford would be the most damning evidence. So how would things end up for old Larry Bittaker?
Oh, he got death sentence.
Like just one, or did he get 100 of them?
I don't know. But I know he got death.
He got death row. Right.
And he's liked fucking being on the stand. It seemed a little bit.
Yeah, kinda, he didn't mind getting
like
up there.
Like when they were playing that tape of that 17-minute tape of that poor girl. Like he kind of just sat there and.
He said that's what he hired her to do. Like that was like part of their fucking arrangement.
He reminded me like his fucking court presence reminded me of Bundy and shit. Like
yeah,
he enjoyed being a part of that.
Oh like, yeah,
cool, fucking,
that was a part of his smart IQ that fucking he was playing off that.
Yeah, I mean, you listen to him talk, very well spoken dude. Yeah. I mean, you have no fucking idea he's doing some shit like this.
Ridiculous.
But this was the first trial, Bittaker's trial, that California allowed cameras in the courtroom.
Yeah.
I saw that Bittaker would file more than 40 frivolous lawsuits from prison.
Like getting fucking broken cookies and shit.
Yeah, or a smashed sandwich.
Bro.
Yeah, right? You're in fucking prison, man. He's saying it was cruel and unusual punishment. But he's playing the system. He's just filing fucking briefs and filing lawsuits. Why not? You got nothing but time. He's just like, being an asshole.
Let's just fuck with the system. Who cares?
Right. He got married early in his time on death row, but then she divorced him soon after that.
Yeah, 4 years. Like, that is soon, but at the same time, like, you know this motherfucker's never getting out. Why you marry this motherfucker for 4 years? Like,
it doesn't make any sense.
Weird.
Yeah. He's given 3 execution dates, but he fights it tooth and nail. Legally, he's doing everything he can. He even represented himself at some of these. He dies in San Quentin, though, at the age of 79 from natural causes in 2019.
It's crazy that they both died so recently.
I know. And close to each other, because Norris was sent to Donovan Correctional Facility, and he also dies of natural causes at the age of 72 in 2020. So very recent, both of them. Stephen Kay, the prosecutor I mentioned, he said it was worse than the Manson stuff, which I can imagine. With kids.
It's fucked up, dude.
The tape recording. I mean, my God. Also, the chief investigator of Bittaker and Norris committed suicide in 1987. The note that he left behind stated the case as being the main reason he did it. He was fearful they were going to let them out and that they were going to get his family. So he figured if he was dead, they'd leave his family alone.
All right.
So have talked about this before, but that 17-minute tape of that torture of Lynette Ledford is what, you know, would be used actually still today by the FBI to train agents and desensitize them at how horrific this shit can actually be. So pretty fucking crazy, but like we talked about with the toolbox down in New Mexico, that case, the lead FBI agent killed herself after watching those videotapes. Right. So, yeah.
Like, couldn't do it.
Yeah, just couldn't be in a world where that happens, you know? One interview I saw with Bittaker mentioned the fact that he felt Norris was the one who instigated the whole idea of raping girls and doing his shit. But I don't doubt that Norris wasn't, you know, if Norris wasn't a part of it, you know, that whole folie à deux thing, I think that the two of them together was just the perfect match in gasoline.
Light that fire,
to
son,
fucking
yeah.
get them going in this, like, feeding frenzy. Like Leopold and Loeb, the Hillside Stranglers, Ken and Barbie, and on and on and on. So, Chris, Joey, anything to add to this disgusting fucking story?
No.
No, I thought we did it pretty badass.
I think so, too. I think we covered it pretty well.
Yep.
I did my research with this one, watched a few different documentaries. There are some good ones. The one I liked was called The Devil and the Death Penalty.
That was really good.
That was really good. They had, you know, the attorneys. Yeah. You know, a lot of people were talking on that one. I also watched an interview with true crime author Candace Fox, who corresponded with Bittaker for 2 years and actually met him. She said he was cold and never really admitted to anything, blamed everything on somebody else.
Right.
I also watched some video of his testimony, too. And like you said, he's very cool, you know, kind of Bundy-esque with the whole getting into the whole being up there in the center of attention and as sick as that is for what he was doing.
Yeah.
You know, it's fucked up. Definitely one of the darker stories out there. And, you know, the whole recording it, I think, makes this one that much worse because you can literally hear it. And that's just unbelievable.
Talking about his the video of his testimony.
Yeah.
That's another thing with the pliers. Like, I touched the pliers to her breast, and a couple seconds later, you can hear him putting in there. And they're like, why'd you do that? He's like, I wanted to shock her with the cold of the metal. Like,
yeah.
What the fuck, dude?
He was saying all that fucking screaming on the fucking tape was fucking foreplay for like.
Yeah that basically.
Sexual fantasies. It's just like, oh my God.
I know. And he's doing it straight face. Yeah, and everybody that's watching is like, dude, are you fucking kidding me? Like, yeah, wow.
So ridiculous.
Whatever, dude.
So crazy. So next week, though, we are going to be doing another despicable motherfucker, but we're going up to Canada for this one.
Clifford Olson.
Clifford Olson, the beast of British Columbia. I bet a lot of you don't know shit about that one, but you will next week because we're going to dish that shit out. He had 2 years of fucking raping and killing 11 children. Really
again,
fucked up.
Here we
another
go
one
with the
with
kids.
This shit. Did not mean to do it this way, I guess. We're going to have to palate cleanse after this one.
Right, yeah.
Definitely a brutal one. We'll have our listener back, Shane Borchuk, who's going to come back from Winnipeg to talk to us before he takes his winter vacation. He said he goes up to northern Canada like ice road trucker style and goes out into the wilderness up there.
Fuck,
so,
dude.
Yeah.
Goddamn.
So Shane's a badass, and we'll have him on next week. I'm going to have the horns. I'm doing my feature on the Winnipeg band Votov. And since we're going to be talking all Canada, we're doing all Canadian metal next week, too. So that's going to be good. You definitely don't want to miss that one. Now, Joey, any good brand new crack in the 2022 page a day is out?
Cracked in the brand new page a day, also cracked out the old one. So it was a little bit of partial from the end of 2021 and into 2022.
Right. So what do you got?
So thanks, Page a Day. So there's this one, and then every now and then I do them talking about fucking an unknown victim, you know, fucking John or Jane Doe, basically. And this is one that they're talking about, and it's a female that was Asian, possibly of Japanese. Okay, I'm going to, just to clarify, I'm only doing this one because I looked up something, it made me look up something about it afterwards,
yeah.
And I got a little something about that to play off it.
Okay.
And so I'm going to read you the page a day version, and then I'm going to read what I found. Like, it doesn't fully match, but we're going to say. So anyway, they're talking about this female Asian, possibly Japanese nationality, 20 to 35 with light brown hair, no clothes on her. She's naked. They find her skeletalized remains scattered across a hillside in Missoula County, Montana, on September 9th, 1985. She'd been shot in the head sometimes between 83 and 85, and they did extensive dental work, and that's one of the things that they concluded that she was from Asia, because the style of fucking tooth stuff that she was getting was done over there, I guess.
Gotcha. Dental work?
Suspected serial killer Wayne Nance is believed to possibly be the woman's killer, but he was killed in a botched murder attempt in 86. So that's what made me look it up, is I was like, who's this Wayne Nance guy?
Right.
This is Montana. Nothing happens in Montana. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
So whenever I looked it up, he was a suspect in all these other Jane Doe. So this one that I just read you, this girl, she's known as Christy Crystal Creek.
Okay.
There was also a Betty Beavertail, because she was found near Beavertail Trail. And there was also a Debbie Deer Creek, because they found this other lady's body somewhere over there. So anyway, the Japanese lady they talk about in the fucking page a day, they gave her a name. You can even look it up, I think, just on Murderpedia or whatnot with the Wayne Nance. But they gave her a name, and she wasn't Asian, so she had just had the work done over there or something like that. She was actually from, like, fucking Oregon or something like that. So a little bit of discrepancy with the fucking Page a Day. I thought that was funny.
Page a Day need to step it up.
Yeah. The Wayne Nance dude. So this dude's crazy. So he had, like, I think there's like 8 people that they attributed that he killed, probably 20. But the problem was, is he fucking went in to kill this other fucking couple. He fucking tied up the guy, or he shot him and thought he was fucking incapacitated. I don't know the full story. Took the woman upstairs and he was raping her. The guy got free, fucking put one fucking bullet in his fucking rifle, went upstairs and ended up killing Nance. So he got killed during a fucking attempted murder rape.
Oh, shit.
So he never got convicted of any of these.
Oh, wow.
But he's been proven through DNA and other reasons.
Oh, wow.
So that's a good one. So yeah,
that's fucking crazy.
Anyway, so I, like I said, I had to do a little cross fucking referencing on that, just because.
Good work.
All right, so I got 2 more from Paige today. So happy 2022, everybody, hell from yeah. Murder Metal Mayhem, too.
Hell yeah.
Right?
This is about Joseph Paul Franklin. Now, this dude's born in Mobile, Alabama. He's known as the racist killer. Oh, I mean, boy. If you're known as the racist killer, right. Like,
that's wow.
That's so, not good.
So,
no, not good to go in prison known as the racist killer.
So he's born as James Clayton Vaughn Jr., but he changed it to reflect Paul Joseph Goebbels, who was a fucking Nazi something.
Oh, my God.
So he took that name, and then the last name he took after Benjamin Franklin. So
apparently
these were some of his heroes.
Benjamin
He reads Mein Kampf at some point, and he is inspired to start a race war. Like, he's just about that life. He attended a white supremacist rally, like somewhere in Virginia or something, with David Duke, who at the time was just a student.
Right.
You know, so he was like already rubbing shoulders with the worst type of people that you can.
Right.
So he's a drifter. Drifter, which we like the drifter killers.
Love the drifter killers.
And he supported himself with bank robberies and blood bank donations. Like, he liked to go to the blood banks, give blood.
There
you know.
Go.
And so, rob banks.
And rob banks. Yeah, get paid
blood
from both
bank.
Banks.
Yeah, get paid
money
from
bank.
Both.
Yeah.
So in July 1977, he firebombs a synagogue and destroys it. But luckily, there was no one inside at that time, so there were no injuries. But that started his fucking rampage, I guess.
Oh, boy.
He killed up to 20 or more people until August of 1980. So pretty fucking, you know, heavy fucking streak. In 1978, he used a .44 caliber Ruger to ambush Hustler publisher Larry Flint and his lawyer Gene Reeves, and he shot both of them. They both survived, but of course, Larry Flint was left in the wheelchair.
Right.
And that was because of Joseph Paul Franklin.
Shit. Oh, wow.
He had also shot, I don't have the name right now because I was just trying to do so much, but it was a really big civil rights activist, too. I can't remember the name. But yeah, he was shooting people based on, like, he shot somebody through a Taco Bell window, I think a black manager or something, because he was working with white girls. And then he, like, fucking targeted other people who were in interracial relationships.
Wow.
No shit.
Yeah, so, like, he was really, like, trying to do shit because he was a fucking bigot and shit.
Right.
So all of his racist tattoos that he had all of him, you know, they fucking already, they're like, fucking an ID for him. So,
oh, 100%,
so the cops know that he's like, they already know about his blood bank thing, that he was giving blood to all these blood banks.
Right.
So they fucking sent out an alert about, hey, look for this dude with these tattoos. And somebody at a blood bank in fucking Florida fucking seen him and fucking called the FBI and turned him in. You know, they fucking, he gets arrested. He did a lot of his crimes. Like, he did Florida, Missouri, Kentucky, I can't remember. There was a lot of different states. Like I said, he was a drifter killer. But Missouri is the state that ended up with him, and he was put to death there, and he died November 20th, 2013.
Wow.
So Joseph Paul Franklin,
God damn,
the racist killer.
Racist
killer. When that's your moniker, it's not good.
No.
God damn.
All right, and I got one more, and I feel like this is something we've talked about before, but it's a continuation of it. So kind of like a little brutal rewind through Page a Day right here. So Pedro Rodriguez Filho, aka Pedrinho Matador, which is Killer Petey. He had already murdered dozens of people by the time he was imprisoned in 1973 at the age of 19. He spent most of his adult life in prison, where he allegedly racked up another 47 victims in the prison system, including his own father, who Pedrinho killed in retaliation for murdering his mother. I think we talked about this guy before.
Okay.
But maybe not. But anyway, this motherfucker's crazy. Like, wow. He's just in there. So after a total of 42 years behind bars and an estimated 100 murders, he's released in 2018, Jesus. Determined to find peace and dedicated to keeping kids away from crime. The medium for his message, what's he use? YouTube, of course. So now dubbed Pedrinho X Matador, that's X-Killer Petey, his channel boasts more than 130,000 followers and nearly 10 million views. Pedrinho offers commentary on crime and warns against drugs and the criminal lifestyle. His code of conduct starts with the basics, urging young people to respect their elders, keep skateboards off the sidewalks, and be honest with their parents.
Skateboards off the sidewalks.
This motherfucker killed all these motherfuckers, and he's a YouTube star.
Yeah. He's a YouTuber, dude. What
that's
the fuck?
Holy fuck. So that's page a day for today.
Skateboards, so. Chris, off the fucking sidewalks. Jesus God Christ. Damn, that's dude. So fucked up. Page a day. All right. Well, I think we've done plenty of disgusting murder tonight. Oh, I think it's time to crank it up. Talk about some fucking heavy metal. So, Joey, what the fuck do we need to do?
Let's get our metal on.
Just because CK has passed on, he's not done educating the masses. CK will forever be the great metal motherfucker. We're here to stomp poser ass and eradicate the planet of their kind. CK has passed the torch to us, and we will forge the fuck on. In CK's name, we will bestow metal knowledge upon all of you.
All right, the great metal motherfucker lives on here.
CK!
Murder Metal Mayhem.
He got the fucking cheap, CCK got the cheap knockoff Iceman shirt
on.
Oh,
man, so. We put CCK in the Iceman shirt that I got from China that wouldn't fit like a 10-year-old boy. Oh, God. But CCK's got it on.
Stretchy.
It's a little stretchy, that's right. All right, so we are in the metal segment, and Joey, you got the horns tonight, so
hell yeah,
take it away.
I'm doing Macabre tonight. Every one that I've done so far, I've done on fucking an Illinois band.
Hell yeah.
That's cool.
Except for the, you know, when I did the Witchcraft one, that was only because CK was supposed to do that one.
Well, right, but still. That's
so fucking... I kept the same band.
Right.
So
right.
That one wasn't. But ever since then, since I've been doing them, I kept them all Illinois bands. And I'm doing Macabre, who is from Chicago, Illinois.
Macabre.
Yeah. Huge fucking influence on me. Fucking awesome band. They were formed back in 1985, and they're still active.
Wow.
And Macabre is and always has been corporate death on guitars and vocals. Nefarious on bass, and Dennis the Menace on drums. This band has been the same three people since 1985.
That's unfucking believable, yeah. Man.
Unfucking real. Now, I also want a fucking little side note, but Nefarious, the bassist, he was also the bassist on First Jason's first album, Jason is Watching.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, I saw that. I didn't know that, but yeah, he apparently fucking
nice.
Did that.
For real?
Yep.
That's cool.
Yep. So their style is pretty varied. Now you gotta think they fucking came out in 1985, so definitely a hardcore and punk influence in the first shit, but they also fell into the grind thing, you know, as it was coming up.
Right.
And because of their lyrical content, which is mainly serial killers and things, they were fucking classified into death metal categories because right. of that. But Macabre, like I said, since being around since 85, I mean, they fucking helped influence every one of those genres, really. Right,
sure.
So, you know, they call their music murder metal.
Right.
Which you know, makes a whole lot of fucking sense.
And we're murder
sense,
metal right. mayhem, so that's cool.
Right. Right. And hence that last hint.
Yeah, the last hint, you know, murder metal, no mayhem. So right. that's why they are murder metal.
Right.
And they're fucking Chicago's murder metal. Like, that's, I love that they're from our state.
Whole right. album called yeah. Dahmer, which I know is Milwaukee, but right close, yeah. dude.
Right, close to Chicago.
So, they came out, like I said, 1985, and in 1987, they put out their first demo, which was called Shit List. They also released an EP in 87 called Grim Reality. Almost every one of these albums that I talk about is available in some format, 7-inch or something. Some label has picked it up and has cool. been selling it. But In 1989, they put out their first full length, and it was called Gloom. And it's just a badass album. And fucking, you know, they were talking about the McMassacre murders and right. just a lot of stuff, you know, that people weren't fucking talking about because this is right before, like, the Dahmer and fucking, you know, the big explosion.
Oh, yeah.
But, yeah, so 89, their first full-length Gloom. In 93, they did another fucking EP called The Night Stalker. But then they put out fucking... And also in 93, they put out fucking Sinister Slaughter, which is their second full-length. And to me, it's just fucking amazing nasty, album. Dude, yeah. That came out on Nuclear Blast. The cover art is fucking iconic. It's like the Beatles fucking Sgt. Pepper,
right.
but it's all fucking serial killers and shit. Yeah. And then them in the front row, too, right, which is pretty awesome, you know. So that was 93. In 94, they put out another EP called Behind the Wall of Sleep, which is actually a Black Sabbath cover,
right.
which is what it is. Story. Yeah, and a Lovecraft story. So they did a cover of the Sabbath, but I think there was like three other tracks on it, too. In 99, they put out the Unabomber EP. And then 2000, they came out with their third full-length called Dahmer. And that album is just fucking awesome. Every fucking song is about Jeffrey Dahmer.
Right.
Corporate Death, the vocalist, like, he went to all the trials up there.
Oh, wow.
And I think he even took his mom with him, like, to some of those, the Dahmer trials. He's got pictures of him with fucking Gacy in prison posing and shit. Because he would go fucking visit him and all that shit.
Oh, wow.
So, I mean, yeah, McCobb's definitely the real deal. Like, when they play live, too, like, if you don't know, like, look it up. It's fucking sweet shit, but...
And just recently, they go through, their show, like, yeah. Sick Rick.
Yeah, but they go through and they fucking tell the stories of these serial killers, and then right. they go into the song, but they give a backstory behind almost all of them, which is awesome,
because right.
they do know what they're talking about. So 2002, they do Morbid Campfire songs. In 2003, they put out, in my opinion, one of their best albums is Murder Metal, which is just fucking heavy from front to back, and we're going to play one of the songs, Fatal Foot Fetish, in the bumper music, but it's off of that. 7 years
ago, song?
Yeah, Jerry Brutus. So. 7 years later, in 2010, they put out the Human Monsters EP. 2011, they put out Grim Scary Tales. Also in 2002, before Murder Metal, they did put out an album called Morbid Campfire Songs.
Which is fucking...
It's awesome, but it's like basically all just acoustic songs about like the Donner family.
Tom Dooley.
Yeah, fucking, Tom Dooley. It's really fucking cool.
It's really fucking cool, dude. Like folky.
Yeah.
Huh.
So 2011, Grim Scary Tales. And then, 2 years ago now, but 2020, they put out Carnival of Killers. Which was just a fucking awesome album, one of my favorites of the year.
It's really good.
They came back onto Nuclear Blast with that one. I think they were on Decomposed Records for Dahmer and for Murder Metal. But anyway, they were back on Nuclear Blast with Carnival Killers. Such a fucking awesome album. They fucking had one of their songs, Exhumer, and it was on... Death Is Just the Beginning, too, which Nuclear Blast put those out back in the day, which were like compilation albums.
Yeah.
Pretty influential. So they had a song on there. They also have a live video of them doing Albert Was Worse Than Any Fish in the Sea on the John Borowski Albert Fish documentary. Right?
Yeah, yeah.
So that's fucking cool that, you know, he put that on there.
Yeah, Borowski loves those guys.
Yeah. And then, like Chris was saying, Sick Rick, you know, that does the Mass Force and shit, they, McCobb puts on a fucking annual show every year, Holiday of Horrors. And it's pretty diverse fucking mix of fucking metal bands. It's really good. But Macabre always plays and fucking it's up in Chicago, of course. But Sick Rick, like this year, did fucking three fucking all brand new masks for them.
Yes, he did.
For them to fucking wear on the stage. Fucking right. And they used it during their set and shit. So it was really cool. All I love the fucking Albert ties.
Fish with the fucking with black this, metal
oh,
horns.
God. Oh, yeah, the black metal so horns. Awesome. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's badass.
So, you know, I mean, as far as Macabre, like I said, they fucking been around for a long time. They fucking toured all over the place. They fucking stuck with it. Huge influences. I've seen, like, Corporate Death. I saw him at a show in Chicago when I was, like, fucking, you know, in my younger 20s. And he's just there checking out the show, having a good time. And, like, my buddies who were younger than me, like, when I told them who it was, they were all freaking out and kind of fucking... swinging on his nuts and hanging all over him. And right. I felt kind of bad, but he was super cool about it, you know. And I remember another time I told this too, but I was down in Dallas and fucking Macabre was playing, and fucking they played Reno's, I believe. And the guys who I were with, they were like, man, I don't think they had seen Macabre before. They were like, that's fucking awesome. I was like, you want to meet the singer? I was like, fucking, I guarantee we can hang out with him. So I go find Corporate Death, and I'm like, man, I got this lemon skunk if you want to go smoke it in the car. And, you know, he was like, fuck yeah, because he was always, he loves Amsterdam, you know.
Right.
So I was like, oh, the weight of the man's heart's weed, you know. But I asked him, and sure enough, he came and hung out with us, and we're fucking smoking out in the parking lot in Dallas, and my buddies are just like, dude, it's fucking awesome. Yep, that's my fucking... my murder segment on fucking Macabre.
Metal segment. You said murder.
Yeah. Murder metal segment.
Murder metal. There you go.
It happens.
Very cool. All right. Chris, what about the Lost Classic this week?
Lost Classic Night is a four-song EP from 1988. Surf Nicaragua, Sacred Reich, man.
Fuck hell yeah, dude.
That's songs.
That's a good one, man.
The title track, Surf Nicaragua, One Nation, War Pigs, Black Sabbath cover, which is an amazing fucking cover of that fucking song.
Yep.
And Training You of Life. But yeah, it's fucking Sacred Reich, thrash shit, fucking... if you haven't heard that shit, like I said, it's four-song EP, dude.
It's been a while, but yeah, it's good stuff, like, man.
18 minutes long, the whole thing. It got re-released, I can't remember what year, and they added two live songs, fucking Ignorance and fucking Death Squad, like lives, but on the re-release, but fucking awesome. And then in 2002, also the song fucking One Nation off of that EP, Soulfly did a cover of on their album 3 in 2002.
Oh, cool.
So fucking check out Surf Nicaragua if you ain't heard that shit. It's a fucking great ass fucking
Sacred
album.
Sacred Reich, man. That's old school stuff.
Fuck
too.
Yeah.
I had my fucking Macabre notes on this fucking.
I know. I love
on this
that.
Religious card.
That's hilarious. I love that. Now, what have you guys been listening to lately? Joey, what about you, man?
Well, I've had that Macabre going, so I was fucking working on doing that, but also checking out fucking my buddy Fupa Goddess. Over in fucking Virginia.
Fupa Goddess, I love it.
Hell yeah.
Yeah.
And what else I got? I got the Project Pat CD in the car right now, 3-6 Mafia. I don't know. There's a lot of shit. I was checking out some more of that fucking FKU, the Freddy Krueger's over there. And then...
good stuff.
Today I found another fucking Lil Almas, this 2 Disarmageddon. And they were from South Africa.
Yeah, so. I checked out a little bit of that. Pretty good.
Might have been
stuff,
like spreading the disease anthrax.
Yeah, it's definitely. I hear that. Chris, what about you, man? Anything good?
Yeah, all of it. Honestly, I've been listening. I started listening to it again. I listened to it a little bit, but fucking Rob Flynn from fucking Machine Head, his podcast, fucking. Some good fucking interviews of people on there. Like really, really good fucking interviews.
That's cool.
So like, I've been listening to that, and then I don't know. I Decapitated. I was listening to a little bit, but
fuck yeah, they got a new album coming out.
I know, right?
Can't wait.
I just listen to things. I just like, okay, I'm gonna play that.
Right.
Okay, I'm gonna play that.
That's fine. I as always, I ask these guys I interview, what bands are you listening to? And I've been finding out some good ones here lately. Corrosive with a K from Toronto. They got an album called Caustic Hordes that came out last year. Fucking amazing. Or 2020, I think it was.
I did that too.
Yeah.
That's last year. No, it's not.
Right.
But yeah, really good thrash metal from Toronto. Really good stuff. They've got a couple music videos out, so check them out. Corrosive with a K. And then the band Schizophrenia, I found out about them from the band Warfect that I did the interview with from Sweden. They told me about Schizophrenia. Those guys are from Belgium. They're fucking amazing. That's like a death thrash thing. Their Voices EP reminds me of early Slayer, like Show No Mercy, Hell Awaits, meets... a little bit of Old Carcass meets Old Death. I hear a little Chuck Schuldiner in the vocals sometimes. But those guys are wicked. They've got an EP for free out there on YouTube called Voices. Now, they've got a new one coming out in February. And so I'm really anxious for that one. But I've talked to both Corrosive and Schizophrenia and going to be doing interviews with both of those guys.
I tell you what, we did our fucking, our tops, you know?
Right.
Whenever I posted my list on the fucking Murder Mel Man page, like, I got quite a few fucking likes about it, you know, and from some of the bands, which I thought was cool.
That was great.
But the band Ravager, they're from Germany, like I said, they were really cool. They were like, man, glad you, they like fucking commented on the Murder Mel Man one and my personal page.
Oh, cool.
And I hit it, I fucking messaged him, right? But I just commented on the thread and I was like, yeah, man, I do this podcast, Murder Mel Man, if you guys ever want to do an interview, you know, but I didn't hear nothing back. But sometimes it's because of the whole language thing. Like, they're what the fuck's going on?
Right.
But anyway, it was cool to see so many bands like actually, like, you know, Pyrexia fucking liked all of
that. Yeah, that was great, man. Yeah. That was great. And I think on mine, I remember, I can't remember the bands. Enforced was one.
Hell yeah.
And there was another band that, Angelus Apatrida, liked it. Well, that was cool.
Yeah.
Also, I stumbled upon a band. I was just doing some stuff, and I stumbled on I love Butcher. The
album name.
Butcher, okay? These guys are speed metal, is what they call it. I would say the same thing. But the album title, Chris, of album titles.
It's fucking forever the most amazing thing. 666 goats carry my chariot.
You gotta God love it.
Damn.
And the album cover art is pretty cool, too.
It's like the chariot fucking coming out of the flames and
pulling
shit.
Pulling the chariot with the goats, yeah. 666 goats carry my chariot. Really good stuff. They've got some music videos out, and they're, like I said, good speed metal from, I think it's Belgium. I think they're from Belgium as well.
Belgium, yeah.
So really good stuff. Always love to get turned on to new bands. I mean, that's what it's all about. Now, the 666 Club, we got a new Patreon supporter. What was cool is that he didn't only pay the $3, he went up to $4.50.
Oh, hell yeah. Thanks for the buck 50,
thanks,
bro.
Dude. So yeah, that's really cool. So we got a new Patreon supporter that actually paid extra. So must love some Murder Metal Mayhem. That was really cool.
It's cool when people do that. Like, I just fucking put out my new album, Disfigure in the Narrative, and when I put it out on fucking Bandcamp and shit, I just fucking put it for free download. Like, I didn't even bother with the price. But, you know, I still got a handful of people that fucking paid me $5, $3.
That's cool.
Just thanks something.
For the, yeah,
it's
yeah.
Like, cool. You didn't have to do that at all, but you did. So that much respect for that.
That's it. That's really cool.
I mean, I probably get 10 cents out of all of it. But
all the fees and shit. I know. Kindle and Amazon, the same thing with the book. So, so our Patreon, 666 Club, they get the episodes early, they get bonus content, and the karaoke songs when I record them, so it's a cool thing, and it helps us out, $3 a month. Link to that in the episode description. All right, well, we have done plenty of metal tonight, so Chris, tell us what the fuck we got to do.
Let's go to our mayhem
didn't have a clue. And Jerry Brutus would kill five women. He would put the jerk off too. Jerry Brutus was the first fattest killer. Got the ladies inside his freezer. Dressed it up and he was that he'd beat on. Jerry Brutus. Jerry Brutus. Jerry Brutus.
Oh, thanks for calling Insta Streaming Service. Can I help you?
Yeah, I wonder if you can sell leather at your shop? got an old jacket that I like to have repaired, yeah.
Of course, we can with all sorts of materials. We have wonderful assortments of home decor made from human skin. We got several lamps, a few styles of curtains, drapes, and even a pillowcase made of very nice.
Human skin?
Yes, we have some exclusive clients who love to purchase items made from human skin. You should feel how soft these napkins are. They're made of the skin of small children.
What the fuck? What the fuck's wrong with you motherfuckers?
I'd be happy to put Ilse on to talk with you about it. She loves to discuss her human skin line. We have something for every price point. Please feel free to come in. We're running a special on thumb drives right now. We're at 666 Dead Camp Circle Puchwald.
I'm fucking disgusted by this. I'm calling the Better Business Bureau after I leave you a horrible Yelp review. You sick motherfuckers.
Oh my God, what Chris, the fuck, dude? Ilse's seamstress service commercial Holy with shit. CK doing CK. The caller. Yeah, that was
in Bushwall.
Took me by surprise hearing CK in there. So before that, of course, Macabre Killer Foot Fetish. We've started playing a 60-second clip of the feature band.
I like that.
Yeah, that's cool. So very, very good stuff. And man, the fucking MP3 sounds so much better than the streaming stuff we've done before. So killer sound. All right. Well, very, very good. Joey, you said we're in Mayhem. So you said you had a little bit of a Mayhem story tonight. And you did a good job with Macabre, man. That was great.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Macabre.
Now, what do we got to bring up here in this Mayhem segment? I can't tell you about it. I got to have my buddy tell you.
Oh, no.
Oh, shit.
So Punky Brooks has come in the studio to talk to you about something, Pete, that he wanted to bring up that he thought, you know, I'll let him talk.
Oh, boy. Okay.
Well, Punky.
Punky in this motherfucker, 419 ho, in the studio, horns high, Midwest represent. Now, what I want to talk about to Pete Alteri, the main man behind Murder Metal Mayhem, that's you, bro. I hear that you was coming up as a Pittsburgh Steelers fan, and you think that you just don't like the NFL right now, but you need to represent and pay attention to the Steelers.
Oh, wow.
And I'm going to tell you about the motherfucking Steelers.
Hell yeah, dude.
They got motherfucking Ben Roethlisberger.
Right.
He played his last game.
Right.
In the motherfucking stadium last night. You're right. Where's he from?
Finley.
Right here. Finley. Motherfucking 419. Ben Roethlisberger from the 419. Graduated 99 Finley High School. His sister also an athlete on a scholarship.
Oh, wow.
He was one of the original 419 Crips.
Wow.
You can't diss him. You guys to represent the Steelers. Only for the 419.
The 419, dude. Wow.
So I just want to get that shit out of there. I wanted y'all to know here in Illinois that 419 don't like to be forgotten.
Okay.
So you guys better represent Ben Roethlisberger, Finley, 419, represent out.
Oh, wow. Right. A little appearance.
Later, Punky.
By Punky. Yeah, Punky. Yeah, don't let that dude. Door hit you on the fucking way out. Nice. Punky stopping in to set the record straight.
We were watching the fucking game, and they were like, yeah, this boy from Finley. I said,
wait, what?
I said,
fuck?
Michael, back even, that up. What
I
the
didn't
fuck?
Put two and two together with that because I knew he was from
That's
Finley.
So fucking hilarious. That is hilarious. I couldn't believe it. I was like, oh my God, I'm getting on the podcast tomorrow.
Yeah, well, I got the character in Deeper Than Dead that's from Finley. Yeah. He's just like a total burnout. Yeah. Lester.
Yeah, that was fucking hilarious. As soon as you started talking, I was like, oh, wait, I remember now. God
that's
damn
good
it.
Stuff. Well, I've had a few of our listeners ask me about Deeper Than Dead. That's the novel I just finished writing. I've got editing. I'm wrapping it up now. And then it goes to the grammar proofreader. And then it'll be done. So Brian's wrapping fucking up the right, artwork. Dude. So Deeper
the
Than
artwork
Dead.
Done? Hell yeah.
Coming together. And I'm really excited about it. And once I'm done with that, then I'm going to write the short story follow-up to the 666 Express called Create the Chaos. It's going to be really cool. I got some really good ideas for that one. So a lot of good writing stuff going on. Hoping that Deeper Than Dead is out by like April, May, I was thinking about an Easter release, being that it's a book about hell. I thought that'd be kind of cool to come out on Easter or near Easter.
It would be make the most sense timing wise because Easter's like,
Christmas is already gone. I don't want to wait till next Christmas. So yeah, I'm thinking Easter maybe. Easter release.
For Jesus season.
That's right.
Released
her.
Right. So mention Creation of Chaos 3, of course. You know, I've got that audiobook out on Audible, iTunes, and Amazon, or you could buy the physical. If you want to buy it from me, creationofchaos.com, or you can get it at the Painted Wraith. Chris, we love that place.
Right here in
just text Pete it. Let's get physical.
Physical.
Downtown Bloomington, Illinois. Also at the Peoria Public Library, you can get my stuff there too. All right, we got a killer cage match to get to tonight. We've come up with 70 killers, 70 objects, 15 variables. And our listeners, Chris, they picked those random numbers.
Yes, they do. And in our three-corner ring, we have Rebecca Boomstock in the remaining championship quarter.
Hell yeah.
Fuck yeah.
Hell yeah. She won it last week.
Fuck yeah, she did. Fucking, you're the champ. Ray McFalls fucking all the way over there, fucking down south doing his thing, ready to kill.
Right.
And we got Michael Draymond over there probably jerking his pud.
Probably. Didn't get enough last week, had to come back for some more, you know. So
he's a glutton for punishment.
That's right. And we got a good one tonight in the cage. Joey, who do we got fighting to the death tonight?
We got Bundy. Ted Bundy is going against fucking Carl Panzram.
Hell yeah, the sodomizing madman.
Panzram sounds like a fucking
Panzram
crotch rocket.
And Chris, they got a couple of good objects to fight with tonight.
Yeah, they got a couple that at least one of them is going to use a lot. A fucking wiffle ball bat.
Yeah, that would hurt.
Yeah, and a gun that shoots high pressure cum.
Okay.
So, like, how high pressure? Like car wash?
I don't know. Like... Yeah, exactly. I'm not sure. I don't know the specifications of it. So yeah, so we've got Ted Bundy, Carl Panzram fighting to death in a cage with a wiffle ball bat and a gun that shoots high pressure semen, and the variable is Hillary Clinton drunk after partying at the Nation. Chris, we had this one before, and you were shaking your head then too. Why are you shaking your head?
Because I don't like Hillary Clinton at my house.
Okay, maybe she broke in. I don't know.
Fuck.
So, what do we think here tonight, Chris? What's going to happen with these two?
If Clinton came to get drunk at my place, dude, she's out. Like.
Okay.
Like, for real.
She's a non-issue. You're done.
You keep up with me. I'm not drinking all that fancy bullshit. Like, keep up with me. We're drinking dirty shit, getting fucked. So I ain't worried about Hillary Clinton.
Okay.
Although after she wakes up and finds out what happened, she might have me put to death.
She might.
But, man.
Does Bundy stand a chance with Panzram?
No, Panzram's like more fucking... Panzram's more like about it. Like, he's coming at you fighting, ready, whatever. He's strong. Right. I feel like he's stronger and more ready to do that. So he's going to fucking get the goddamn baseball bat, I think.
Yeah.
Because he doesn't care who the fuck he's sodomizing. Fucking Bundy's like, oh, dude, I ain't even about that life, dude.
Right.
Like whatever. He's like, Panzram's just like, I don't give a shit. I'm killing everybody in the world right now. And you're going to take this baseball bat in your ass. And I'm going to spray you with this fucking... I'm giving it to Panzram because he's going to overtake Bundy. Bundy was like sly or whatever with what he did with his car.
Right.
But
he was physical with women, whereas Panzram just brutal,
didn't give a shit, dude. He's all
very
fucking
physical.
Kill you.
Yeah, and so I'm literally sodomizing.
I don't want to hear Joey's tale, though.
Yeah, Joey, what do you think, man?
Well, I think fucking Ted Bundy is going to be instantly goddamn annoyed by Hillary Clinton and her fucking drunk ramblings.
Right.
And he's just going to fucking hate some women. So he's going to fucking take that fucking semen blaster and just start spraying her. And then fucking Panzram's like, I like that. I'm going to watch that. And then he's going to run over to her body and fucking bite off her fucking vagina with his fucking teeth.
Right.
Fucking grab it up in his hands, run over and fucking wrap it around fucking Bundy's face and gag him with that stank ass fucking gross pussy. And Bundy, he likes good looking hot pussies, so he don't like that old baddie bag shit.
Yeah, he don't want no Hillary Clinton.
So he's fucking just out for the count from that, and that's when Panzeram fucking grabs the fucking wiffle ball bat. He does it like this, he does it like that, he does it with a wiffle ball bat. So then fucking Panzeram fucking ends up winning because he's just going to decimate Bundy's asshole piece by piece with his bare hands and teeth.
And
he doesn't need no ruthless weapon.
No, he doesn't need anything. No, he's just that guy that just like, I will fucking.
Do you think if Bundy had his crutch or his cast that would be able to stave off Panzeram?
It's good variables and objects.
Yeah, I don't know, but I think Panzeram just too brutal.
Yeah.
I don't know who would be able to withstand that other than maybe like Vlad the Impaler or one of those we've had.
Oh, yeah, Panzeram's fucking hardcore motherfucker. Like, I give it to him for days.
Yeah, I agree, man. I don't think there's much of a contest when Panzeram's in there. All right, well, I think we have done plenty of mayhem tonight, so let's hit the outro. Fuck yeah, man. Some Solstice.
Killing it.
Who Bleeds Whom.
Oh, yeah.
That was one of your top albums, Joey. That's where it gave me the idea to play it, man.
Casting the Die, their newest album fucking came out last year. Go check it out.
Really good. All right, the bumper music tonight, of course, Macabre, Solstice, and Arch Enemy. And the metal segment intro is by who, Chris?
Chrysix, killing it.
Chrysix. And Murder Metal Mayhem's intro, Joey?
By fucking Low 12.
Hell yeah. And thank you to everybody out there listening. We keep seeing the numbers coming in. Good stuff.
Thank you guys for listening. We appreciate everybody out there doing that.
Yeah, Chris, I love the first one here, the name of this first person here.
Yeah, it's kind of funny. Pop Brownie 666. I want to try one of your brownies. For real.
Send that shit to Beatles.
Can you send that shit? Like,
P.O. Box.
Right. That's what I'm saying. Send that shit, dude. Come on. It says, you guys are the shit. I'm a listener in Buffalo, and you guys are my favorite new podcast. My uncle told me about you. Well, fucking hail you and hail your uncle. Hell yeah,
man. That's awesome. Joey, what about the next one?
Dara Stephenson commented, I love listening to you when I work out. I bust out laughing and people probably think I'm fucking nuts, but I don't give a fuck.
Hell yeah. Thanks, Dara.
Fuck yeah.
Good comment. And Ben Simmons comments, Murder Metal Mayhem is the best podcast out there for true crime and metal combined. You guys are hilarious and I get a ton of info. I love the prison stories with Tex. So
fuck yeah, dude.
Love having Tex on.
We'll be having a new one with him soon.
Yeah, we do have one coming up with him here by March-ish or so. All right, Chris, what about that last one?
We got Debbie Yeardley 566. Just 100 off, dude. Debbie Yeardley 566 says, I just started listening to you guys. I live in L.A. now, but moved to Fresno. My boyfriend told me about you. I've been checking out all your episodes for the last 6 months. Damn.
Yeah, you're probably warped, Deborah, so we're sorry for the headache.
Sorry,
yeah.
Dude. Holy shit.
That's definitely, just going crazy on some Murder Metal Mayhem. That's awesome.
Yeah, no, appreciate that.
Thank you.
Fuck yeah.
So you could check it out at murdermetalmayhem.com to listen to those past episodes. You can like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, and the YouTube channel. We need more of you on there. Subscribe. It doesn't cost you anything. Then you know when we post new content.
Right.
We got lots of good interviews on there. The Rob Dukes interview I did, the Warfect interview, the Kelsey from Winter's Gore. Did some really good ones. So go to the YouTube channel. You can find us easily, Murder Metal Mayhem.
I'm going to go back in time. I'm going to repost the Goremonger in the Gray Room on there.
Yeah, that was a good one. I recently posted my The one with Robbie screaming when he was at your house.
Yeah. Hell yeah, dude. Yeah, that's
the Brutal Vocal
shit,
Academy.
Man.
Yeah, so we've had a few good ones on there. But yeah, that live Gormonger here in the Gray Room, that would be a good one to post. So you could check us out on pretty much any podcast app you want. And if you do, give us a rating, give us a comment. We appreciate it.
Yes, we do.
And you could support the show to join the 666 Club. That's our patreon.com/murdermetalmayhem. And it's only $3 a month, but we had one listener throw in an extra $1.50. So thank you very much. That was really cool. You could go to creationofcast.com if you want to pick up one of my books. You could check out the episode description to order Creation of Chaos 3, which is a collection I did of short stories, horror, suspense
shit.
Type stuff. And you could get the audiobook on Audible, iTunes, or Amazon. So you can get it whatever way you want it.
Check out the fucking episode description and everything. It'll be right there.
That's right. And we can't let him go without hearing a karaoke song. I did not have a chance
real
to get
quick.
Him. Yeah. What's
just because I just pulled it up.
Yeah.
First thing I saw was our buddy Bo Keating.
Yes.
Yeah. Out in Republic, Washington.
He got his package.
Fuck so.
Yeah, dude. Yeah. Hell yeah.
So motherfuckers do win these things. So
that's
whenever
right.
we put up little contests.
Yeah, you want to enter the contest.
Nice.
Doesn't cost you anything. Glad Bo got his stuff. Very cool. All right. Well, I did this karaoke song a while back, but I didn't have a chance to do a new one. We had some ice storms and shit going on, and it was kind of crazy.
Fucked.
So crank this one up, and until next time, keep one foot in the gutter.
And keep your fist wrapped around a pair of pliers.
Boy! Now in the street there is violence. And a lot of work to be done. No place to hang out the washing. And I can't blame all on the sun. Oh no! We go to Rock Town 2, Electric Avenue. And then we take it higher. Oh, we go to Rock Town 2, Electric Avenue. And then we take it higher. Working so hard like a soldier. Can't afford a thing on TV. Deep in my heart I abhor ya. Can't get food for the kid, good God. We gonna rock down to Electric Avenue. And then we'll take it higher. Oh, we gonna rock down to Electric Avenue. And then we'll take it higher. Electric Avenue, and then we'll take it higher. Who is to blame in one country? Never can get to the one. Dealing in multiplication, and they still can't feed everyone. Oh no! We're gonna rock down to Electric Avenue, and then we'll take it higher. How we gonna rock down to Electric Avenue, and then we'll take it higher. Out in the street, out in the street, out in the daytime, out in the night. How we gonna rock down to Electric Avenue, and then we'll take it higher. How we gonna rock down to Electric Avenue, and then we'll take it higher. Out in the street, out in the street, out in the playground, in the dark side of town. How we gonna rock down to Electric Avenue? take it higher. We're gonna rock down to Electric Avenue, and then we'll take it higher. Electric Avenue. We're gonna rock down to Electric Avenue, and then we'll take it higher. Electric Avenue. Yeah.
Mother, mother, man.